Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
This is Pat Iyer with Iyer's Insights, and today I'm going to be talking with you about deaths from overdoses of medications. Where were they overdoses? An interesting question. In the previous podcast, you heard Sharon Kelly talk about the police perspective on opiates. And today I'm going to share with you a couple of cases that I read about in medical malpractice verdicts, settlements, and experts that were published in the July 2018 edition. In the first case, which took place in California, there was a 54-year-old self-employed contractor who called his plastic surgeon, with whom he had been friends with for over 20 years. He called on the morning of September 29th, 2014. The man complained of pain in his neck, back, and shoulder and upper arm. The decedent had previously held multiple telephone conversations with the surgeon during the week of September 22nd, 2014. The decedent had informed the surgeon about his complaints and claimed that the pain had not been resolved with the use of over-the-counter medication and rest. Thus, at the time of the telephone conversation on September 29th, the surgeon prescribed a powerful narcotic called Vicoprofen and a muscle relaxant called Soma. The decedent did not come to his friend, the surgeon's office, for an examination. In fact, he had never been previously treated in the surgeon's office. A few days later, the decedent and some friends went to a celebration of life event following the death of a family friend. The decedent consumed significant amounts of alcohol at the event and then went to bed at 8:30. On October 3rd, 2014. The following morning, friends discovered the decedent in bed. He was dead. He had apparently died at some point during the night. An autopsy was accomplished. A medical examiner performed it, which revealed that the decedent had an enlarged heart as well as modest coronary artery disease. The toxicology lab studies also revealed a blood alcohol content of 0.13% and therapeutic levels of Vicoprofen and Soma. The issued autopsy report concluded that the primary cause of death was cardiac in nature, but with contribution from the combination of drug and alcohol toxicity. The plaintiff's daughter decedent's daughter, who was the plaintiff, sued the plastic surgeon and his medical office, meaning the entity known as his medical office. The plaintiff alleged that the defendants were negligent in the treatment of her father and in issuing prescriptions for her father's medications. She alleged that this negligence constituted medical malpractice and caused her father's wrongful death. The surgeon's practice was voluntarily dismissed before trial. Thus, the matter went forward against only the plastic surgeon. The plaintiff's pathology expert was the person who performed the autopsy and issued the opinion about the combination of drug and alcohol toxicity. He testified about his findings and the basis of his conclusions regarding the cause of death. He also testified about how he determined the combination of drug and alcohol toxicity contributed to the decedent's death. The plaintiff conceded that the decedent bore responsibility or some blame for his death because he did drink alcohol while on the pain medications. However, the plaintiff also argued that the defendant was wrong in prescribing the medicine in the absence of an actual physical exam. According to the plaintiff, the defendant and the decedent were both to blame for the decedent's death. So the interesting legal question is, how do you separate out those areas of responsibility? The plaintiff had an internal medicine expert who noted that California law precludes a physician from issuing a prescription for medication, particularly narcotic medication, without performing an examination. There has to be a face-to-face patient encounter and a good faith physical examination prior to issuing the prescription. On that basis, the expert opined that it was below the standard of care for the surgeon to have issued the prescriptions without first performing an examination. The defense's plastic surgery expert opined that the defendant had gathered all pertinent medical information over the phone from the decedent to determine that the prescriptions for Vicoprofen and Soma were indicated and appropriate. And the telephone communications did in fact satisfy the patient examination required by California law. Interesting, an argument that a phone call equals a physical examination. Moreover, the expert pointed out that even in retrospect, there were no medical conditions present that would have made the prescriptions contraindicated if a face-to-face examination had taken place. So this is the argument of, well, we didn't do it, but even if we had, it wouldn't have made any difference. The defense's pathology and cardiac pharmacology experts both testified that the cause of death was indeed primarily in cardiac in nature, but they opined that the event was triggered by the binge consumption of alcohol. The two experts explained there was no drug toxicity in this case, as all medications were at therapeutic levels and did not trigger any type of cardiac event. The surgeons claimed that he advised his friend at the time he was issuing the prescriptions that the medication should not be taken with alcohol. And of course, the decedent was unable to contradict that testimony. Thus, the defense argued that the decedent caused his own death by consuming alcohol while taking the prescribed medications. The jury found in favor of the defense after deliberating for 45 minutes at the conclusion of a 6-day trial. This case was called Taylor Hitchcock versus William Aiello and Ocean Plastic Surgery Center in Orange County. An interesting case in which the decedent is held responsible for his own death by his actions. And the combination of the medications and the alcohol, the potentiating effects of those medications, remained a battleground in the analysis of this case. This is Pat Iyer. Before we continue with the show, I'd like to draw your attention to a resource I created that will help you analyze emergency department cases. These are the types of situations that are high risk, where much can go wrong in an emergency department. And some of those cases might involve overdose of opiates. Would you be able to separate out the bad outcome from the medical malpractice events? I wrote a book called Analyzing Emergency Department Medical Malpractice Cases. This book focuses on the highest risk aspects of healthcare. Emergency department care may be an issue in a personal injury case, a medical malpractice case, or in any case in which the patient required emergency services. Do you understand the complexities of how the emergency department functions? This book will take you behind the doors of the ER to get a bird's eye view of what goes on. There are several aspects of emergency department care that make it high risk for errors. There's an unpredictable flow of patients. There's constant pressure to quickly assess and treat patients. There's a lack of a previous relationship with the patient and a huge variety in conditions and ages of patients. The public is increasingly aware of emergency department quality of care issues. Demand for emergency department services is increasing, and with it, cases against ER staff. In this book, you'll get an understanding of the roles and responsibilities of the emergency department related to triaging, assessing, diagnosing, and treating emergency department patients. It highlights emergency department liability issues and provides vital content to help legal nurse consultants analyze an emergency department medical malpractice claim. Order your copy of my book today at http://lnc.tips/ed and use the code LISTEN to get a 25% discount on the book. That link again is http://lnc.tips/ed and use the code LISTEN to get a 25% discount on the book. Now, let's return to the show. I want to share with you a second case, which is shorter, also involving a person who died after consumption of medication. This was a Mississippi case. In this case, the decedent, who was a 24-year-old man, was struggling with drug and alcohol addiction. In the fall of 2011, he was admitted to a drug rehab facility. The facility was known as a phase two program with a residential setting. Patients could come and go as they pleased. His parents paid $10,000 a month for his treatment. His parents visited him 2 months later, and the deceased was reluctant to re-enter the facility, presumably after the time of the visit. He was placed in the facility's infirmary. He had a roommate in the infirmary, and they engaged in drug-seeking behavior that evening. The two men entered the defendant physician's unlocked office and found a sleeve of Suboxone in the defendant's desk. The decedent ingested the drug. A short time later, a nurse found him in respiratory distress. While efforts were made to revive him, he suffered from a fatal overdose. There was an initial autopsy that indicated he died of citalopram overdose, but a month later, the decedent's family retained counsel, and they communicated with a roommate, who then, as a result of what he said, a second autopsy was performed. The Suboxone was detected, and the autopsy was amended to reflect the joint toxicity. The decedent's estate established negligence or alleged negligence regarding the storage of the drug. The defense alleged that the decedent engaged in burglary to access the drugs. Therefore, the plaintiff's claims should be foreclosed by the decedent's own wrongful conduct. The trial court granted summary judgment to the defense, and there was an appeal. The court reversed that decision. It concluded that there was an exemption to the wrongful conduct rule when the defendant had a duty to protect the decedent from engaging in the wrongful conduct in the first place. The estate then settled its claim with the facility. The jury returned a verdict in favor of the defendant physician. In this case was called the estate of Ben Kahn, C-A-H-N, deceased, versus Lloyd Gordon, M.D., and it was decided in Rankin County, Mississippi. In this case, the fact that the young man was able to get to the unlocked office was the thinking behind holding the facility negligent and having them settle the case, but the physician, whose office it was not found to be negligent. When jurors are faced with cases involving the behavior of the decedent or patient or plaintiff, depending upon who that case is about, they have the opportunity to assign blame to the actions of that individual. And here we have two cases that I've shared with you in which the consumption of medications was a factor in the death of the patient. As a legal nurse consultant, you can be involved in cases involving opiates in many different perspectives. you could be asked to evaluate a case in which nurses gave too much opiates to a patient or did not appropriately monitor the person after administering opiates or did not recognize the interactions between a variety of medications that were ordered and used poor judgment in administering them simultaneously. You could be involved in cases in which people commit suicide by accessing medications, or physicians or other prescribers who prescribe too many medications and are not carefully monitoring the impact of those medications on the patient. These are interesting cases with horrible outcomes, and you will no doubt be involved with them increasingly as we are focusing more and more on the harmful effects of opiates and the mechanisms that are not effectively controlling their use as of now. This has been Pat Iyer with Iyer's Insights. Thank you for listening to this program. Return again next week. We'll have new shows. I would love it if you would subscribe to receive the transcripts of our show or to our show itself. You can subscribe to the show at http://lnc.tips/transcripts, and that will give the transcripts of the show you can refer to in the future. And you can also go back and read as opposed to re-listening to the podcast. I would love to be able to communicate with you by giving you those transcripts. So please sign up at http://lnc.tips/transcripts. Be sure to order your copy of Analyzing Emergency Department Medical Malpractice Cases at http://lnc.tips/ED. Use the code LISTENED in the coupon box to get a 25% discount. That link again for Analyzing Emergency Department Medical Malpractice Cases is http://lnc.tips/ED. And use the code LISTENED in the coupon box to get a 25% discount. And I've got a phenomenal resource for you just waiting on LegalNurseBusiness.com. My online training and books are designed to help LNCs discover ways to strengthen their skills and their businesses. Check them out at LegalNurseBusiness.com. Many of us are lifelong learners who enjoy the chance to keep expanding our knowledge, just like the Book of the Month Clubs, my membership site, lnceu.com, gives you 2 online trainings every month. We have a yearly payment plan that saves you over $50 compared to paying monthly, and each program is hugely discounted. Look at the options at lnceu.com. And my last website, the lncacademy.com, is the coaching program I offer to a select number of LNCs. You get my personal attention and mentorship so that you can excel and build a strong foundation for your LNC practice. Get all the details at lncacademy.com.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on LegalNursePodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on LegalNursePodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.